This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
From KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line.
Those bit swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go.
We have arrived to Friday. The weekend is just about here, but we can't be completely done with the week until we get a Friday edition in of a Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Welcome into the program, everybody. My name is Matt Pauly, taking you until 8 o'clock this evening. A little bit of a unique night here on KMOX as we have SLU Billikens basketball this evening, but they have a late start. Maybe that third late was a little bit too much, but they've got a late start. They are in Kansas City, and they're taking part in the Hall of Fame Classic. They match up against Wichita State this evening. That game is scheduled to start at 9:30, meaning our coverage with Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. will get started at about 9:15. So we've got our full two-hour edition of a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We've got a couple guests that are going to be coming up on the show today. Rob Raines is going to join us in about 10 minutes or so. We'll talk with him about the Cardinals' offseason so far and what the expectations should be moving forward. And also, we've got our weekly Friday conversation with our guy Kevin Wheeler. He's going to join us in the 7 o'clock hour. No Gas House Gang tonight. We will not have that from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock. So if you need to have your Gas House Gang fix, well, we've got that for you. We'll play a little bit from me and Bernie Miklas from today's program. We'll do that towards the end of the show coming up on 8 o'clock today. All right, want to start with the Blues, and I've kind of been going back and forth with myself on yesterday's game because it's a win. It's a win. They won. Like, I keep repeating that to myself. They won. They got the 2 points. Like, they did what they were supposed to do. And in sports, at the end of the day, all that matters more often than not always, but more often than not, is did you win or did you lose? And last night against the San Jose Sharks, they come away with a win, 3-2 in a shootout. So this is not a backhanded compliment. This is not me running away from the fact that they got 2 points. This is none of it. Credit where credit is deserved. The Blues won last night. They won a hockey game. That is good to see. They lost 6 of 7 going into that matchup. Now all of a sudden, they've won 2 of their last 4, so maybe it's trending back in the right direction. They're about to go on the road. They've got a lot of road games coming up, actually. They're going to play 3 straight games out east, and it's kind of a long trip for 3 games. They're not going to – a lot of times when you go on a road trip of 3 or more games, at some point you have a back-to-back in there. Like, you'll play a game, you'll have an off day, and then you'll play back-to-back games, kind of like they had on this last road trip. That's not going to be the case. They're going to play tomorrow against the Islanders. They'll stay in New York. They'll play Monday against the Rangers. They'll stay in that general vicinity. And then Wednesday, they'll play against New Jersey. So that's a long time to be away for a 3-game trip because they don't have any back-to-backs. But maybe that's good. And then they'll come home for 1 single game against Philadelphia before they go back on the road for 4 straight games. So 7 of their next 8 are going to be on the road. And I would suspect that we're going to know a little bit more about this team by the time they're back home for the next stretch of, you know, some significant home games. They'll play 3 of 4 at home from Thursday's December 12th until Tuesday, December 17th. And I'll be interested to see what I think and what other people think about this team. But they win last night. Again, they win. What was frustrating, and it's okay to point out things that did not go especially well, What was frustrating is they were in line for a win in regulation, and again, they have a third period letdown. And San Jose scores the equalizer at the 1951 mark of the third period. In that moment, that is the epitome of the here we go again moment, where it really looked like the Blues were going to find a way to win. There were some good things that happened. Jordan Kyrou scored a goal. Jordan Binnington looked really good. He ties the franchise record for most wins for a goaltender. So congratulations going to Binnington for that. All of that is true. And I am in no way, shape, or form being dismissive of the good things that happened. But I think it is still a little bit startling when you're playing a Sharks team that just isn't very good, and you are in the place that you're at, and you can't close the thing out. And that's what happened. They don't score any goals in the third period, and they give up the tying goal right there in the final seconds of what was regulation. Again, give credit to the Blues. They go to the shootout. Jake Neighbors was able to score in the shootout. Jordan Binnington stopped everything that came his way. The Blues win the shootout 1-0. They get the victory. They get the 2 points, and it's mostly good. But I don't think a shootout win at home against San Jose changes the way we view this team, where this is still a flawed team. Now, I think they are better than the way they've played recently. I think they're a lot better than the way they have played recently. And maybe they just do need something to go their way. Maybe that's all they needed. And we'll see. Again, we'll get through the weekend here, and we'll get into next week, and we'll watch them play out east and see how things end up going. Maybe this is what the team needed, because there are times in sports, there absolutely are times in sports where a team is snake bit, a team has bad luck, whatever you want to say, and you feel like they're better than they actually, than the record would say, and then finally something good happens and they go on a run. I don't think the Blues are like a lot better than what their record is. I would say they're a lot better than the way they've been playing over the last 8 games or so. Maybe that's what they needed. Maybe they just need something to go their way, go right, and they move forward from there. Phil Broberg's going to be back before we know it. That's another thing that's going to be really, really good for this team. They've got Robert Thomas back. There's 6-7 guys that this team is just, they're not going to be what they can be without those guys available, that top level depth. And it's good to get Thomas back. Broberg's going to be back before we know it. And for the most part, that's a good thing. So Blues get a win. That's the bottom line. Blues get the win yesterday, and now we'll see what they can do as they end up going on the road. A lot of Cardinals talk today. As always, if you want to chime in on anything that we are discussing, you can do so by calling, texting, or tweeting 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to get Rob Rames' opinion on what the Cardinals have done. And what they seemingly intend to do throughout the course of this offseason. He joins us in just a moment. This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
It's a Grid Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly, taking you until 8 o'clock this evening. Of course, we talk Cardinals baseball every single day here on Sports Open Line, and we're very happy to be able to go to the guest line right now and welcome on to the program Rob Raines. You, of course, read him at STL Sports page. You follow him on Twitter at Rob Raines. Rob, always appreciate you taking some time with us. How are you?
My pleasure, man. I'm doing good. Thank you.
What's I don't think we've talked to you throughout this offseason. We've learned that the Cardinals are trying to create opportunities for young players. It feels like a Nolan Arenado is likely to get moved. They've already created an opportunity behind the plate with a couple young catchers. But there's also a lot of things that kind of need to move forward and be pushed around before I think they get to where they want to go. How do you evaluate what the Cardinals still need to do this offseason to kind of get to where they want to be?
Well, if they really want to hit their goal of a reset, they have a lot of things to do. You know, I mean, I think that's the problem is, you know, you've got guys that, you know, right now you would name the five starting pitchers that, you know, you project to be in your opening day rotation if the season started tomorrow, the same five guys you had at the end of last year. You know, where's the spot for Michael McGreevy? Where's the spot for Quinn Matthews? Where's the spot for Tink Ernst? Where's the spot for, you know, Graceffo? So, you know, I think that's one area they've got to still address, I think. And, you know, moving Contreras to first did, you know, kind of open up catching with Herrera and Pies, but that also blocks Alec Burleson a little bit. And so, yeah, I think Arenado's a big key to this. If they want to give us a JC a chance to play, or, you know, either, you know, where you're going to slot Donovan and Gorman full time. So, yeah, there's still a lot of moving parts to this. I don't think that they've got figured out yet. And I think, you know, to me, you know, I've said before, I think the two key guys in this whole reset thing are Arenado and Helsley, because they're, I think, the two guys that you could move, especially Helsley, and get a lot of good young players in return. But then by saying that, they've got to have a spot for him to go. Got to have a spot for him to play.
I agree with you 100% on Helsley. He's the most attractive candidate to be able to get some high-level prospects back. Rob, I might respectfully disagree with you on Arenado with that. I guess it depends on how much money you hold on to as he moves, but right. I do wonder how much Arenado could actually bring you back from a prospect standpoint.
Yeah, well, I guess maybe I should clarify what I mean by that is you have to, if you move him, then you open up that spot for somebody younger, you know, younger opportunity to play for a guy like Sajacy or even, you know, Donovan Gorman if they want to move to third base. So that's what I know you're not going to get as much back for Arenado, especially if you ask somebody to try to take on that contract. But I think getting out of from under that contract, giving that opportunity to a younger player is what they need to try to do.
When it comes to the rotation, I'm sure the Cardinals would love to no longer be connected with Mats and Michaelis because you're able to get out from under those salaries, and that would give them the opportunity to give those roles to younger players like you just referenced before. But Michaelis has a no-trade clause. He's very comfortable as a Cardinal. He gets to sleep in his own bed during spring training, like all that. Mats has had these injury issues where if you move on from him, you're probably going to have to eat a lot of that contract. I think it's going to be a challenge to move on from those guys.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I think, you know, for the last winter, you know, John Mozeliak's reign here as the president of baseball operations, he's got a lot of work to do and a lot of tough work to do. I mean, there are a lot of tough things to do. It's not going to be easy. And even, you know, with Heim Bloom chiming in, too, with what, you know, what he wants the team to look like going forward after 2025, you know, I mean, that's, you can say what you want to do, but being able to actually go out and do that and execute those moves is going to be hard. And that's, you know, there's a reason players, you know, want no trade clauses, so they don't have to worry about going somewhere that they don't want to go. But yeah, you know, it really hamstrings the club, and you know, so you don't want it to get to a point where they just have to make a decision to eat the contract and release the player. But at some point, that's the option too.
And from a position player standpoint, we talked about this with third base. Maybe it's Nolan Gorman that ends up over there. They're, you know, Brendan Donovan can play anywhere. That's great, but you got to make sure that you do have almost every day at bats for him. At some point, JJ Weatherholt's going to arrive, and he seemingly is going to be the second baseman for this team, and it seems likely that he is a Cardinal before the end of this upcoming season. So in many ways, whether it's Gorman, whether it's Donovan, whether it's Sajacy, those guys are all going to kind of be contending, not just to get playing time, but to get playing time post Weatherholt arriving.
Yeah, and that's just in the infield. And then you got an outfield where if you move Donovan to the outfield, then what do you do with Nupar? And then how what happens to Michael Ciani and Victor Scott II, and then you got Walker sitting there, right? So that's, I mean, they've got the bodies of guys. You know, the one thing I'm hopeful for, and what I really want to see happen this season is if they do truly go with this reset and give the younger players a chance to play, I just hope we don't get into a situation where if a guy is struggling a month into the season that all of a sudden he's back in Memphis or not playing every day. I mean, I really think that this is the opportunity to give these guys a chance to play and let them learn and let them grow and let them make mistakes. And they get better. You know, if they're not going to be a contending team in 2025, there's no reason not to go let these kids play and see what they can do.
We'll jump back into the Cardinals in a second, but we have some breaking news that just came down. I'll get your thoughts on it since we're talking to you. The Royals and Reds have pulled off a trade where the Royals are getting Jonathan India and Joey Weimer, and the Reds are getting Brady Singer. You got any thoughts on that one?
Actually, that had been rumored for a while that the Royals were trying to get a leadoff hitter, and that that they had been talking to the Reds about India. So it doesn't come as a great surprise to me. You know, the Reds are another club that have a lot of good young guys. I mean, McClain was hurt, you know, all year this year, and they've got some other good young, De La Cruz, obviously good young infielders. So getting a pitcher like Singer probably could help them. That right now strikes me as a trade that could help both teams.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think Indy had kind of lost his job there in Cincinnati. He didn't have the role that he had before, and we know as an everyday guy, man, he can be a really good player. And Kansas City dealt from a position of strength there. There'd been talk that maybe they could move some pitching there to acquire something. So I think that's a really interesting move. It impacts the NL Central, and obviously it impacts a team just down the road from St. Louis as well.
Yeah, they've been busy. You know, they re-signed Waka and now make this trade. So, coming off a very good playoff caliber club, that AL Central race is going to be really interesting because all those clubs there, they've got some really good young clubs. We know how good Cleveland is, what they could do. You saw how much Detroit improved this year, and Minnesota had to deal with a lot of injuries, but they've still got a lot of talent, and they're all those clubs. It seems like to me are very similar size markets, very similar size payroll situations. So that's going to be fun to watch, who can bring all the talent the best and make the best moves to be the team to beat in that division.
Rob, I look at Kansas City and I think that they've got some really smart people there making some decisions, and they made front office changes before this past year and they brought in some smart people. The Cardinals are going through that transition right now. Chaim Bloom's going to be the guy next year, but he's already in place. They brought in a Rob Serfolio who's got an incredible track record. To me, I think the thing that keeps me most hopeful about the Cardinals, it does feel like they are bringing in some really smart people that look at things maybe a little bit differently, and that could be a good thing.
Yeah, you can get stale in this business. I mean, there's no question that sometimes you're in the job for too long or the things become too comfortable. And so I think that's hopefully what the Cardinals are doing is being able to kind of put some fresh blood in those key decision-making roles and kind of see what shakes out of it. I think, we all, believe that the Cardinals have drafted really well the last few years and brought a lot of good young players into the organization. They just got to get them to take that next step from being, prospects into, regular productive major league players. And I think, I'm really curious to see what happens with the rest of the minor league restructuring that we've, heard so much about and talked about, how they're going to have, more people involved, more coordinators at different levels, more coaches, who the managers are going to be. I'm really curious to see, how many of those jobs are filled internally and who are some of the people that might be joining the organization from, somewhere else that can help, boost those players along too.
Yeah, it's funny because this is an organization that from an infrastructure standpoint needs to do better with data and analytics and technology and all those sort of things. But at the same time, they need to do better with just flat out coaching. They didn't have enough roving coordinators and things like that going around the minors. I still think that they missed out on an opportunity when Jordan Walker was back at AAA. They should have had a roving outfield guy that they could have just parked with him at Memphis and worked with him defensively every day the same way Willie McGee did with him when he was at the big league. So there's people sometimes are dismissive of bringing somebody in who wants to focus in on data and analytics, but it feels like in this situation, as much as there is a focus on that, and rightfully so, there is a renewed focus on actual coaching as well.
Well, I think the organizations that have risen to the top of baseball are the ones who understand the mix, understand that you have to have both, that you have, there's a spot and there's a place for analytics and the data and crunching the numbers and see, figure out what they tell you. But then you have to have somebody who can go out and understand the numbers and execute it, the plan to see, to benefit the player who, can make the most of that work. And that's one thing I think Serfolio does have a good background in doing, is being a guy that could bridge those two areas. is, I'm sure that's kind of the people he's looking for to hire in those jobs are guys who could do both of that, because I think you need both, and I think the Cardinals have had probably been lacking in both of those areas for the last several years.
I've always believed that we give too much credit and we put too much blame on hitting coaches. If you get to the big leagues as a hitting coach, you're probably pretty good at your job, and a lot of times it's up to players more than coaches. But Brant Brown was one of the biggest hires this offseason. He's got a really interesting background. It's his skill set and the job that he took in Seattle, even though it didn't work out for him well there, shows that he's more than just like a conventional hitting coach. And this guy has as important of a role as anybody, because when you think about if the key to the Cardinals in the near term is a Jordan Walker and a Nolan Gorman being able to take steps forward, there might not be anybody in the organization that's more connected than that than a Brant Brown.
Yeah, and I think you hit exactly the two key guys. You know, if this club is going to have the players that they want to have, you know, Walker and Gorman are the two, you know, number one projects. I mean, they have to get those guys right, and they have to get them right sooner rather than later. So that, I'm sure that's, you know, I saw a couple of things that Brown's already met with Gorman out in Arizona and has made plans to go see Walker. So they're well aware of that, and they're, you know, already starting to get that process rolling. So how productive he can be with working with those two guys is going to be really key to this club's success.
It is my contention, and maybe I'm being overly optimistic, but it's my contention that if you move on from a Lance Lynn and a Kyle Gibson, I think a Michael McGreevy, a Gordon Graceffo, a Quinn Matthews, a Tink Hintz, whoever ends up getting opportunities, I think as the year goes along, those guys can match what you got from Lynn and Gibson. I think if you don't have Arenado and you don't have Goldschmidt anymore, and you look at what they did not do last year, and you plug those in, and guys like Gorman and guys like Walker are able to take steps forward, I don't think you have to squint too hard to see a scenario where in a reboot year, this team is still competitive and this team is still kind of putting together the same type of record as they did this last year, which obviously isn't the long-term goal for a team that wants to win World Series. But in a reboot year that's maybe better than some teams, agree or disagree with my overall sentiment there?
I agree with you if the young players can make that next step and become better. You know, I mean, you can't have Gorman striking out 40% of the time. You can't have Walker, you know, spending half the year in AAA. You know what I mean? So you got to have those guys be able to hit that next level and be able to do that. I do think, even though it may not necessarily be measured in terms of, you know, hits or wins on the field as far as, you know, pitcher's record is concerned, I do think, however, there's a place for leadership and older players who kind of can run that clubhouse and kind of run players. I do know, like, Kyle Gibson had a real valuable role in that club last year as far as advising young players. I can't tell you how many times I saw before a game in the locker room a younger pitcher going over there and spending time at Gibson's locker and with it watching, you know, they're with their iPad out looking at video and kind of talking about situations and scenarios and things like that. So there's something to be said for that, and somebody has to be able to step up and fill that role too.
Is Brendan, and this doesn't impact pitchers as much, I know you just mentioned Kyle Gibson, but is this the moment now where Brendan Donovan really does emerge as the leader of this clubhouse?
Yeah, I kind of think he's already taken a couple steps, you know, toward that. I mean, the way he was recognizing the players on their major league debuts last year was a really key thing, I thought, that he and Gorman and Burleson all kind of got together and did. So I do think he's the kind of guy that's got the personality to do that and can become a little more vocal. And probably if some of the older, more established veteran guys are not around as much, you know, maybe he'll feel a little more comfortable taking that, you know, taking on the more of that role. I still think Contreras is going to be a valuable voice in that locker room, too, because he understands. I mean, obviously, he's willing to agree to stay here through the reset and change positions, even though, you know, they gave him the option if he wanted to go somewhere else. So I think that is going to bring with it a little more of a leadership and a responsibility to kind of be a guy that that is kind of a go-to guy for some of those younger players.
Rob Raines covers the Cardinals for STL Sports Page, stlsportspage.com. You follow him on Twitter at Rob Raines. Rob, we always appreciate you spending some time with us. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and hopefully we will talk to you again down the line.
Thank you, Matt. Anytime.
Awesome. Very good. That's Rob Raines joining us on the program. We appreciate him spending a few moments with us. We'll dive a little bit more into that trade because it certainly does impact things in the NL Central with the Reds being involved. I don't know what to think of the Reds. I don't know what to think of the Pirates. I think this is a really interesting trade, though, for the Reds and for Kansas City for sure. Even giving up a pitcher like Singer, my initial indication is Kansas City just got better. That's my initial feeling on this. I think when Jonathan India is once again given a job and being told you're an everyday guy, I think you get a really impactful ball player. And Cincinnati didn't have that quite as much this past year with him because they were kind of dragging him through the mud a little bit. We'll get into that a bit more in just a moment. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Have a little breaking baseball news for you. A lot going on. We told you in our last segment about the trade where Jonathan India is headed to Kansas City. We'll get more into that in just a moment. But the Cardinals have announced today is the non-tender deadline, or the tender deadline, whichever way you want to call it. Cardinals non-tender, one player. I'm a little surprised, maybe, that they make the decision to move on from Adam Klopfenstein. He is no longer in the organization after being non-tendered. He pitched one game this year. I think I saw John Denton maybe tweet this out, so I don't want to take credit. No, it was Ben Hockman. Excuse me. Ben Hockman tweeted this out. I don't want to steal something and not give credit where credit is due. Klopfenstein, Kyle Sixtus, Spurs producer extraordinaire, has the rare distinction of pitching in a major league game yet never playing in a major league stadium because he pitched in the Rickwood game.
Right.
Yeah, so that's not many guys have probably had that type of history where you get in, because, I mean, Major League Baseball hasn't been playing that many non-major league venue games for that long. But I know he was a starter. I always thought he profiled out as a reliever. He had that sweeper that was really, really good. I would have loved to have seen him get some sort of major league opportunity as a relief pitcher, just to see if kind of just sitting on that sweeper, he might have been somebody who could be pretty good.
I agree with that, and especially in the bullpen. I mean, he was a lower to mid 90s with a fastball type guy. Maybe he lets it loose a little bit, is able to get in the higher 90s with good off-speed stuff. I would have liked to at least see what he could do.
Yeah, I agree. And look, they're going to do other things. The 40-man roster sitting at 38, so they've got some 40-man flexibility, which is a good thing to have. I would expect that he is going to get picked up. He was part of the Jordan Hicks trade. He came over from the Blue Jays along with Sim Roberta. So, yeah, I think he was ranked as the number 15 prospect maybe in the organization this year by MLB Pipeline. He was in that area if it wasn't that. So maybe a little bit of a surprise. But, again, if the Cardinals – and this is where you sit there and you kind of look at the emergence of Heim Bloom in the organization and realize that this is somebody who is very, very good at identifying pitching talent. If the Cardinals didn't have this belief in Klopfenstein that he was going to be able to really become a consistent major league pitcher, well, then they make this move now, and maybe this is going to open up an opportunity for them to improve themselves on the 40-man roster. He did a really good job in that Rickwood game. It's one game. That doesn't matter. That doesn't tell you anything. If he would have gotten blown up in that game, exact same situation, one game doesn't tell you anything. I didn't love him as a starter because his pitch mix wasn't great. But I certainly like the idea of him as a relief pitcher, and he's not going to be out there for very long. He's going to get another opportunity with another organization, and I bet we do see him pitching in the big leagues at some point in the relatively near future. He got that opportunity with the Cardinals this past year. The biggest news, though, that again, that we've been talking through is this Royals trade. And Kyle, I said it earlier, I just think Jonathan India, once again, being, because in Cincinnati, there was like drama. I don't know if you remember last year, the Athletic beat writer for the Reds, former head of the Baseball Writers Association, his name will come back to me in just a second or so, but he and like Kirk Herbstreit got into it on social media because of Jonathan India, and Herbstreit, you know, football guy, obviously thinks very highly of Jonathan India. And the Reds have a lot of really young, really exciting players. I think you can still sit here and say that from a talent standpoint, the Reds might have the most talent of any team in the NL Central. It's unproven talent. It's unrefined talent. They need to do some other things, but that's what made the Reds a scary team going into this past season. I think you could easily have squinted this past year. You know, when the season got started, I thought there was a scenario where the Brewers were a fourth place team. I saw a scenario where some version of the Cubs and the Cardinals and the Reds took the top three spots in the division, and the Brewers were a fourth place team. Now, obviously, that did not happen. I don't remember what my prediction was before the year got started. I certainly wasn't right. I know that for sure. And I certainly discounted the Brewers a little bit. I probably said they were going to be a third place team, not a fourth place team. But if anything else, with the Reds, you get a pretty good pitcher and Singer, a guy who can develop into something, and you no longer have kind of the Jonathan India headache anymore.
Right. If two teams were going to make this deal where one acquires offense and one acquires a good pitcher, I think the Reds were in need of good pitching. Obviously, they have Hunter Green and Lodolo, and we were just talking about it the other night. They have Nick Martinez now on a $20 million deal. But outside of that, getting Brady Singer as an established another pitcher in that rotation, I think, is pretty big. And the Royals get India. The Reds have McClain, their future second baseman, who I think they want to be playing that position for a long time. And so India gets a good bat, and the Reds get a good pitcher.
See Trent Rosecrans, by the way, from The Athletic is the name I was trying to come up with a few moments ago. Super good guy, really, really good baseball writer. One of the best baseball writers out there, covers the Reds for The Athletic. His name just skipped my mind there for a moment or so. Joey Weimer, whatever. Like, seems like just a throw-in more than anything else.
For sure.
Yeah. We'll see what now. If you're Brady Singer, are you happy with this move? Because you want to go to a place where you feel like they're going to continue to develop you and give you the best opportunity. And I think in many ways, you know, we talk about the Cardinals and their struggles in allowing players at the major league level to become the best version of themselves. I think we're starting to see that a little bit with the Reds. Like, it was a disappointing year this past year for Cincinnati, and a lot of it was connected to injuries. I'm not trying to discount what happened with injuries, but they did also have a good number of young guys who maybe did not take the step forward that you expected them to take. I don't know. They've got a really good pitching coach, though, there. They've got a guy who he was in Milwaukee for a little while when I was there covering the Brewers. He's a former pitching coach at Vanderbilt, and Vanderbilt obviously has one of the best reputations when it comes to developing pitchers. So, yeah, you know what? If you're Brady, I'm talking myself into this one. If you're Brady Singer, I think maybe you're walking into the right spot. Derek Johnson, the pitching coach in Cincinnati.
I would think so. And, I mean, they've developed Hunter Green well. Yeah. They've developed Nick Lodolo well. So if history serves right with Brady Singer, I would assume he'd do the same. And the injuries have been the big thing with Cincinnati's pitchers, not a talent thing.
Last thing, and we're going to jump back to the Cardinals for just a moment, and Kevin Wheeler just sent me a text message, and he makes a really good point. We're not that far out from the Rule 5 draft, and just a couple days ago, we learned which players were being protected and which players were not being protected. I'm sure the Cardinals already have an eye on some guys who are out there. If they're non-tendering somebody right now, if they make the decision to move on from Klopfenstein, and that creates two spots on the 40-man roster, that can be two spots that they can use in the Rule 5 draft. And don't forget, they got Ryan Fernandez in the Rule 5 draft this past year, and he may just end up being the Cardinals' closer this year. In fact, if Ryan Helsley gets traded in the proverbial gun-to-head situation, if somebody says to me, who's the Cardinals' closer when the season comes to an end, because I think the season would start with it being closer by committee, and Fernandez and Liberatore and Romero and guys like that, maybe they do go pick up some type of veteran arm that's available right before spring training gets started. But I think Fernandez has as good of a shot, probably better shot of anybody on the roster, of emerging as the next Cardinals closer. And that's a guy who was a Rule 5 pick less than 1 year ago.
Yeah, I'd agree. You never know in the Rule 5 draft. Don't take it lightly, because guys like Fernandez, there's some hidden gems in there.
And having Heim Bloom in the organization, again, that's his specialty. He is known for being able to identify pitching talent. So this isn't a huge move, but I think it's an interesting move, and I think you can start to push down some dominoes and say, okay, they've got somebody like Klopfenstein who obviously has upside for all the reasons I mentioned a few moments ago. Clearly, obviously, has some upside, has that sweeper that's really, really good, made a nice major league debut this past season, and is one opportunity. If you are going to move on from that individual, why do you do it? Why do you try to clear spots on the 40-man roster, and especially in a year where you're not expected to be really active in free agency? well, that would tell you that a Rule 5 type situation might be coming up where you feel like you're going to be able to pick up a player or two in the Rule 5 draft that can help you very much the same way that Ryan Fernandez helped you this past year. We will take a break and come back, and we'll kind of put a bow on this conversation for the moment. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it here on KMOX. We're taking you until 8 o'clock this evening. Again, we've got SLU basketball as well tonight. They've got a really important matchup as they are going to take on a pretty good Wichita State team. Wichita State tends to be a pretty good club, and Wichita State has started out the year at 4-0. Technically, on a neutral court tonight, they're playing in Kansas City, so I would assume there's going to be more Wichita fans than St. Louis fans there tonight. Wichita just a couple hours away from Kansas City, but this is a good opportunity for the Billikens as they continue to try to put together as good of a resume as they possibly can as they go through the year. I'd be lying to you if I told you that I could sit here and break down the Atlantic 10 Conference and tell you whether or not the A-10 has a good chance of being a multi-bid league. Generally, they are. Last year, they were not. They were not a very good league. And if you have any chance of getting into the tournament this year without winning the conference tournament, winning games like this would certainly be helpful. Wichita State, again, 4-0. SLU comes in with a 2-1 record. They have not yet been fully and totally healthy. They're trying to get to that point, but that's going to be fun to listen into tonight. And then the schedule here moving forward for the Billikens after they play this one tonight, they are going to play host to the 314 Classic as they've got games coming up on Monday and Wednesday of next week, and then they'll play the following Monday after that. So they're going to play four games, in about 11 days or so? So after really good, we're almost a month into the college basketball season. After going the first month basically playing one game a week, they are really going to start to push forward here with a lot more games in a short amount of time. And we're going to learn a little bit more about this team moving forward. Elsewhere around college basketball, it is it's a fairly busy night when it comes to college basketball in the area. Missouri, they are playing this evening. They've got a game that they should be able to win. I was about to say easily. I guess you never want to say just flat out easily, but they should win. They're at home against Pacific. That game right now is a 19-13 Mizzou lead. That game is currently in the first half. Also in the Missouri Valley Conference, a good opportunity for Southern Illinois as they play at Florida, but it's not going so well for them. They have gone to halftime in Gainesville, and the number 21 Gators have a 21-point lead. It's 46-25, so that's been kind of an ugly first half for Southern Illinois so far, and even Southeast Missouri State. They are in action today as well. They are playing on a neutral site. They're matched up against UNC Asheville. That game going on right now in Southeast Missouri State. They have a lead 21-19. So Southeast Missouri State team that was into the NCAA tournament just a couple years ago. We'll see what kind of season they are going to have. Again, what we're really following along with today is just a couple bits of breaking news, and we'll continue to talk through this. If you've got any thoughts on it, you can certainly text into the program at 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air. I don't think Adam Klopfenstein being non-tendered is going to create any type of really big reaction. You know, I remember doing this show last year on the non-tender deadline, and that's when Andrew Kisner was non-tendered, and we got a ton of reaction to that at the moment. Cardinals fans were really angry about that. And if you remember, I mean, honestly, I'm not trying to put down Kisner. Kisner was a really fun Cardinal, and he was coming off a season where he had his best offensive year. But then he ended up, you know, he got signed by Texas, didn't make it the entire season with the Rangers before he ended up getting DFA'd with them. All the while, this next group of catchers for the Cardinals started to really come on in Ivan Herrera and Pedro Páez. And here moving forward, Jimmy Crooks is going to be the lead catcher at AAA this upcoming season. Leonardo Bernal is not far behind. I mean, the Cardinals are just absolutely loaded at the catcher's position. And that's a good reminder for you when going back to the non-tender deadline last year, how folks felt about Andrew Kisner. And again, with all due respect to Kisner, I don't think the Cardinals missed him at all this past season. They got good production from Herrera and Páez and Contreras when he was in there as well. We will take a break for the 7 o'clock news. We've got more coming up. Also, next hour, Kevin Wheeler is going to join us. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.